Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Last week, my guest was Warren Lee Lewis, author of the Franchise Seller's Handbook and partner in franchising and licensing at Ackerman Centerfeet. In the third segment of our Legal Eagle franchise series, Warren and I focused our attention on his handbook as we attempted to demystify franchise compliance. I believe by the end of the show, we certainly were considerably closer to achieving that objective. As always, past segments of Franchise Today, including last week's segment with Warren Lee Lewis, is available on demand at www.blogtalkradio.com/Franchise Today Show. Warren, I thank you for being my guest last week. Today, I will be joined by Leslie Curran, franchise attorney and partner at Play Cook PLC. Leslie and I will focus our attention on the pros and cons of franchisors utilizing franchise brokers. In addition, Leslie will provide us with some info about the recently concluded IFA Legal Symposium, where she participated, and we'll be sure to coax Leslie into telling us a thing or two about the Women's Franchise Network as well, otherwise known as the WFN. On another note, please remember Franchise News Radio will debut on Wednesday, June 2nd. Look for show details within my social media messages throughout the franchise community, and be sure to follow the show on Twitter at Fran News Radio. And last Thursday evening, renowned psychologist and best-selling author Greg Nathan was my special guest on a special edition of Franchise Today. Greg talked about developing and maintaining healthy franchise relationships, which is basically the basis for his upcoming Profitable Performance Franchise Relations Boot Camp that will be held in the Mile High City of Denver, Colorado next week on May 25th and 26th. I believe there are actually still a few seats available, so I highly recommend you sign up right after today's show. Next Thursday, leading into the Memorial Day weekend, Franchise Today will be on hiatus as we take advantage of the long weekend to schedule our programming for the upcoming summer months of June, July, and August. Our intent is to provide our listeners with more interesting shows that will be sure to keep a high level of interest even when you're on vacation. Remember, you can listen to all Franchise Today live and on demand, so being on vacation is certainly no excuse to miss any segment. Sad to say, today is the final segment of the Legal Eagle franchise series, but I will say this. This series has been a huge success, as evident by the record number of live and on-demand listeners over the past 3 weeks. I'm sure today's segment with Leslie Curran will follow suit. This four-part series will be available as a download and on CD for interested parties. Detail to follow in the coming weeks. I have to attribute a great deal of the series' success to my co-producer of the Legal Eagle franchise series, Joe Caruso. Actually, Joe made it happen behind the scenes, providing the foundation for a very informative and interesting series. Certainly, he made my job easier by bringing to Franchise Today some of the brightest legal minds in franchising. But it didn't end there. Joe and I spent many hours collaborating as we defined the objectives of the series, discussed issues and challenges facing franchising today, and then segmenting them all out for a multi-segment series. From there, we examined franchise best practices and defined the series a little bit further as a four-part series that focused on franchisee associations, financial performance representations, franchise sales best practices, and today's segment about franchise brokers. Now, did we stop there? Hardly. That's actually where the real work began, because it seemed to be the most satisfying as we drilled down and defined questions that we felt needed to be answered in order to achieve our objective of promoting franchise best practices, tapping into the minds of some extraordinary legal experts. So fresh from his visit to the International Association of Franchisees and Dealers Convention, I'd like to welcome Joe Caruso to Franchise Today. Joe, it's great to have you on the air.
Well, thank you, Paul, and I appreciate you inviting me to preempt Leslie's segment of the legal series. And I think you're right. From my perspective, our guests on the series, from Mike Webster, Lane Fisher, Warren Lewis, and of course to Leslie Curran, these people represent some of the best legal minds in franchising. And the information discussed through the series provides a great benefit to franchising professionals by dispelling franchising myths and offering practical insights to solving contemporary issues faced by franchisors.
Absolutely. You know, I know we bounced this around quite a bit for a couple of months prior to the series. Just off the top of your head, what did you think we needed to accomplish?
Well, I thought that oftentimes a lot of the things that go on in franchising are somewhat counterintuitive. I think there's a lot of confusion in especially the area of Item 19, earnings claims, or now they're called FPRs, where it confuses a lot of people that are on the front lines of franchising. Not so much those people that have direct top-to-top relationships with their franchise attorneys, but those people where the rubber meets the road and they're selling the franchise and somebody, you know, hits them with a question, well, geez, how much money can I make? And they're at a loss for what to say. They know it's an area that is regulated, but they really don't know how to practically address those issues. And I think that was one of the things, especially in both Warren's and Lane's presentations, that was really helpful to those people that may be needed this kind of information.
Absolutely. And I know, you know, franchisee attorney Michael Webster, our first guest in the Legal Eagle Franchise Series, invited you to attend the inaugural convention of the IAFD in Indianapolis, Indiana. And I know you accepted and attended. Tell us a bit about the event and your experience.
Well, it was their first event, and I thought the conference was great. Steve Ellerhorst, Mike Webster, and the rest of the IAFD team were terrific hosts. And what was apparent to me at the meeting was that the mission and purpose of the IAFD was unique for franchisees in that its foundation was to leverage the network effects of franchise systems in a productive way and to build collaborative relationships between independent franchisee associations and their respective franchisors. I think we can expect in the future the IAFD will have a positive impact on franchisor-franchisee relationships and build better franchise systems. And I think heretofore a lot of independent franchise e-associations have been born out of adversarial situations and problems with franchisors. I think the mission here is entirely different. It's really to leverage those network effects. And one of the strongest points that Michael made to the people in attendance was the interdependency between franchisees and franchisors and the interdependency between other franchisees with franchisees. So I think that they're going to be focusing on some really positive things, and I think there's going to be a lot of great things to come. I think it's something to watch.
Right, absolutely. I agree. And I was really impressed with Michael Webster and talking with him and getting to know him some after the show as well. You know, I look forward to co-producing future shows with you and of course, series of Franchise Today. Any thoughts on what our listeners can expect moving forward?
Well, I think listeners can expect more great guests like Leslie and the rest of the legal series interviewees discussing topics that are of interest to franchising professionals. And I think we can count on things about franchise financing, which is a big issue. Social media techniques as it relates to franchising from a consumer side and from a franchise lead generation side. Technology, and I think other things as they come up that are relevant to franchising, because it's a very fluid kind of spectrum of industries that are involved with franchising, and I think that there's going to be a lot to talk about.
Right, absolutely. You know, I appreciate you you taking the time out of your schedule to be with us today, and thanks again, of course, for your contribution to Franchise Today and to the Legal Eagle Franchise Series. As I said, I look forward to more ridiculously long phone calls as we continue to explore franchise best practices. But right now, we have Leslie Curran on the line, anxiously awaiting her turn in the Legal Franchise Series. I think I actually hear her foot tapping. Leslie is active in franchise industry groups, including the IFA and ABA Forum on Franchising. In 2009, she became one of the youngest attorneys elected to the governing committee for the ABA Forum on Franchising. She's a frequent lecturer and author on franchise topics. Her efforts have been well recognized by the International Who's Who of Franchise Lawyers, one of only 12 women among 100 lawyers in the U.S. and 174 lawyers worldwide, recognized as a leader in the field of franchise law. Franchise Times called her one of their legal eagles and the best lawyers of America. Wow. I have to say it's been a fabulous series, and just being around all the who's who's and legal eagles and super attorneys has made me feel, well, smarter. Leslie, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thank you, Paul, and thank you for having me. And thanks to Joe Caruso, if he's still on the line, for inviting me to be with you today.
Yeah, I actually left Joe on the line. He might want to heckle you a little bit, but no, I think he'll sit quietly. So, Joe, are you still out there? I don't know. Maybe he went away. Anyway, Leslie, I know you've been involved in franchising for quite some time now. We'll agree probably that there would be no franchising without franchise sales. And with many startup franchisors and emerging franchisors trying to make their mark in franchising, franchise brokers have become an easy way for them to get to market, despite doing so it being a double-edged sword. What do you see as the biggest dilemmas for franchisors in utilizing franchise brokers?
I think one of the initial things is that startup and emerging franchisors begin with the idea that because it's an ability to shift their costs, because they're only paying if they get a qualified lead, they don't think about the flip side that initial fee in a lot of instances is what they need to actually service and get that franchisee up and running. And so once they cut down the amount of revenue they're generating on the front end, I think it becomes difficult for them to get those franchisees up and running.
Absolutely, I agree. And I've heard too often of upstart franchisors having 5 or 10 franchise units sold saying, we don't have the cash to provide some of the initial support necessary to get our franchisees up and running. So that's a very valid point. Are there any other dilemmas that franchisors face in utilizing franchise brokers in your mind?
I think one of the other big ones is that franchisors, especially the emerging ones that you're talking about, the planning, they think that they're going to bring in a franchise sales professional, an intermediary, a broker. That person's going to develop the plan and the goal for them and will develop the profile for the franchisee. And they turn a lot of the sales process over to a third party without the structure. And what happens is by stepping away and not developing their own goals, the system kind of takes on a life of its own and ends up, you know, 3 to 5 years down the road in a place where they don't want it to be. And so they've paid a broker or a sales intermediary to bring in franchisees who aren't quite the right fit for them. And a little bit of pre-planning on the front end would have helped them actually think about who the right fit would have been and avoid that problem.
Right. I know in any planning, I know a big part of the planning that I do within social media and all types of marketing is stressing a lot of times identifying the targets and identifying where the targets congregate and communicate. And the same thing holds true with a franchise sales and development strategy is knowing who the targets are. I know I worked with a supplemental education franchise a couple of years ago, and they had been trying to sell some corporate-owned locations and had failed miserably at it. And we went into social media and actually started looking at it. And when I asked the question, who's your ideal franchise candidate, it was like the deer in headlights look. And when we started to drill down into their most successful franchisees, we found that a large percentage of them came out of the education background, which to me was a no-brainer. But when we took that, we found 73% of their top 33% of successful franchisees had some type of education background. And we started drilling into different educational groups within LinkedIn, and we were successful in generating some good qualified leads. And to me, that was a no-brainer. Why would you spend your marketing dollars across the board when 73% of your successful franchisees come out of one industry? So I think, you know, planning, as you said, even with franchise brokers and sales intermediaries, are definitely an important aspect. Planning is definitely an important aspect of having the proper program in place. And when they do bring on an outsider, oftentimes that planning gets pushed aside, especially if they're dealing with somebody that thinks they know it all.
That's exactly right. I think another challenge for newer emerging franchisors when they start using brokers is making sure they review the agreements and the documents that the brokers present. Typically, if you're working with an established broker or broker network, they have their own forms of agreements, broker agreements that they want to use. And often, a newer franchisor will assume that it is what it is and they can't change the agreement, or they don't try to change it. And so I think that's another big problem. Those agreements are generally heavily one-sided, and if you don't at least understand what's in them before you start down the road, I think they can present a lot of problems on the back end too.
Okay, and we'll talk about agreements here in a bit, but I want to change direction a little bit, because I know a lot of franchise brokers are always contacting me and somewhat yelling at me because I never talk about any of the positives about dealing with brokers. And we know there's got to be a positive side for some franchisors to utilize franchise brokers. In your opinion, what would be some of the reasons you would outline for franchisors that might be interested in utilizing franchise brokers? I guess a better question is, why specifically would you recommend franchisors utilize franchise brokers?
Well, there's a lot of great benefits that brokers bring to the table. Initially, a franchisor has to look at the cost of having their own sales staff is really not just the commission that they pay that sales staff or the salary. It goes well beyond that to benefits and to the cost of having office space and the cost of producing certain benefits for them. And so the ability to shift a portion of your administrative cost over to an outside third party and then to only pay that third party if there's actually a franchise sale is incredibly attractive. And if it's structured, if the payment is structured correctly, is an enormous benefit to a franchisor. It's just a question of making sure the payment structure is set up correctly so that when you get down the road, you're prepared for what you need to do.
Right.
So that's
so
the first
outside of the lure not having to have to pay the commission until the franchise sale is made, and what other benefits might a startup franchisor realize from dealing with a franchise broker?
The beauty of a broker is too that they bring you a ready pipeline of leads. They typically have, they get an enormous amount of leads over time, and so they're bringing those leads to you. You're potentially one of 100 of their concepts that they work with. It's usually around the probably 45 to 100 range, I would say, is where they're at. And some smaller brokers only work with a handful of people. Some broker networks would work with more. But they're bringing you a ready pipeline of leads. And so for a small startup or emerging franchisor, and even for some established franchisors, that lead pipeline is incredibly expensive to create. And so the broker brings that to you automatically. And that's another, that's probably another one of the best benefits of a broker network.
Sure. You know, it seems to be what I feel is a cowboy mentality among many franchise brokers. You know, I mean, like in any industry, you know, some are reputable while others tend to bend the rules, while others choose to ignore the rules altogether. And we're not here today to pass judgment on any broker or broker firm. I want that to be clear. But how do you recommend, especially startup franchisors, screen franchise brokers? And let's take that into developing some guidelines instead. You know, what might be the 5 or 10 steps that franchisors should take in selecting and vetting franchise brokers and franchise broker networks?
And I think picking a broker is a lot like picking the right franchisee for your system. So, you know, if you take the step back and you think about first what's right for you and what are your goals, and if you're looking to expand in, you know, one section of the country geographically, then look for the brokers that service that area. If you're looking to expand nationally, then search for the brokers that service that area. Once you get down to figuring out which brokers service your needs, then, you know, start asking for their referrals or recommendations. Review their litigation history and make sure that they haven't been involved in more than a handful of litigation matters. You can see a pattern developing if there's more than that. Ask questions about their experience. You know, ask the broker, ask their recommendations and referrals. I think it's really important to interview the broker network or the brokers and talk to them individually, the people who you're going to actually be working with. You want to make sure there's a good personal relationship between your internal folks and whoever the brokers you'll actually be dealing with. I also think it's very important to, as you're thinking about the brokers and what kind of brokers you want to use, I mean, there's all different kinds of networks and brokers out there that provide a gamut of services, from a lead referral network with just pass the names. They give you names, and the franchisor goes out and does the rest of the franchise sales process, the whole way up to a traditional franchise broker where the entire process is outsourced to the broker. The franchisor still signs the contract and has final approval, but there's people in between. There's all kinds of services in between. You have to find the right fit for you and think about, like I said, going into it, what you're really looking for. So I think it's you know, that piece of it is looking at what your own needs first. And those are the big pieces of what I would say in terms of doing your own due diligence on the broker and doing your own due diligence about what you really need.
Yeah, I think that's some very good advice. But one bit of advice I thought interesting that you left out is ask your franchise attorney about if they've done business with that broker.
Yeah, that one's a good one, too. I mean, it's typically they're probably – you're going to go to them first. I guess I just didn't even think about that one.
Well, you know, I know – and you were talking earlier about the broker agreement, and I do know a thing or two about working with franchise attorneys, and I know that often – the franchise attorney, even if it's inadvertently, is left out when they really should be involved. In the case of franchisors utilizing franchise brokers, many times the franchise attorney is not privy to the franchise broker agreement. If and when you are privy to such an agreement, what would you advise the franchisor to look for and expect from the franchise broker that should be clearly defined in the agreement?
There's lots of provisions that I would tell you to look at, but the key points for me have always been making sure that everybody's roles and duties are clearly defined. So making sure the broker knows what they're going to do, making sure the franchisor knows what they're going to do, and those two pieces really are important for the expectations of the parties. I think the other piece that's just absolutely crucial is the compensation piece. I think that it's not just what's the fee, it's when is it getting paid, what triggers the payment. The other big piece that I think a lot of people don't think about the what ifs and the compensation piece. So it's the what if the franchise agreement gets signed and 2 days later you realize, you know, the bank won't produce financing for that franchisee, or, you know, they can't find a site, or they're not happy. Whatever the case is, the franchisee walks away. You have to at least think about the fees already been paid to the broker. If you have to refund the initial fee back to the franchisee, you're coming out of pocket not just the initial franchisee, but whatever amount you've already paid the broker.
Right.
I think you have to play out those what ifs in the compensation structure.
Definitely beneficial for the franchisor to get their franchise attorneys involved in this process.
Yeah, and I think the other piece that's just it's probably the most confusing for a non-lawyer is the indemnification provisions in a broker agreement. They're crucial to the franchisor. The franchisor needs to make sure that if there's, and you talked about it last week a little bit, if there's a violation of the franchise sales laws by the broker, that the franchisor gets indemnified, gets basically made whole by the broker for that violation. And that's your indemnification provisions, and they have to be written correctly so that the franchisor gets made whole.
Okay. So with the indemnification clause, if it has provisions in there to make them whole, but if there is an infraction, and they are made whole, I understand that, but how is it perceived by various registration states? Because even though you might be made whole by the broker, it's still you as the brand that created the infraction. How is it perceived by state regulators?
Yeah, and I mean it's not just state regulators. I mean, state regulators are not going to be very happy about it. But beyond state regulators, I think you have a PR problem. And if a case gets, even if the franchisor gets indemnified or gets dismissed from the case, if you have a broker that, you know, has a practice of violating the law and those cases are picked up by the media, you have a bigger issue, which is, you know, you've just basically cut off your ability to bring in new prospects into your system, because it doesn't matter what happens with those cases, the prospects coming in see the problem and attribute it to you regardless of the legal wrangling over it. So I think you've got, even beyond what are the state regulators going to do to you, I think from a business perspective, you have a real problem for your future ability to do franchise sales.
Absolutely, and that's something to take into consideration, because even an indemnification clause and it following through to fruition and the franchisor being made whole sometimes might even come close to covering the costs of building that reputation and the brand awareness back up in a positive light, certainly, for sure. You know, I know basically anyone can be a franchise broker. Well, the first things, you know, let's look at first things first. And this has really bugged me for a long time, is brokers referring to themselves as consultants. I mean, words do matter. Are they a broker? Are they a consultant? I mean, maybe they should be called facilitators. Any thoughts on this, or am I left out in left field alone on this one?
You know, I think the terminology matters to different people. So I think from the franchisor's perspective, it matters to them to make sure they're getting the relationship that they want. I think from the franchisee's perspective, though, saying you're a broker or a consultant indicates a different relationship. I think the problem for a franchisee, and this is, you know, something that I'm not sure all prospective franchisees understand, and it's the biggest conflict of interest, I think, one of the bigger conflict of interest that brokers face, is that they're being paid by the franchisor, but basically helping the franchisee. And so it matters what they're, from the perspective of a franchisee, they're looking at them and they're thinking, oh, it's a consultant. I mean, I think they look at them a little differently. They know what a broker is. So I think that the terminology really matters when you're talking about a franchisee and what's their perception of what this person is doing. That's a caution.
Right. I agree with you there, and it just bugs me. In other industry segments, it's very clearly defined what a broker is and what a consultant is, but when you get within the franchise business model, there's so many different interpretations as to what a broker is and what a consultant is, and it really does cause a lot of confusion.
It does, and the other thing this morning, I was reading a few other articles that have been written more recently than the last article that I wrote on franchise brokers, and they're even coming up with more terms, and I can't remember. I read one of them was about a franchise services or a franchise sales services network, so they're coming up with even more terms to throw into the mix, which I think makes it very confusing for the franchisee, the franchisor, and even the broker.
Right.
That's why when I said about the agreement between the franchisor and the broker, I think the roles and the duties just absolutely are critical in terms of defining the relationship and everybody's expectations.
If you were given the authority to pass a rule on this, what would you have them called?
I would have brokers who actually broker who are actually acting like brokers, I would have them called brokers. And I would have, you know, the other folks called, you know, if they're just referring the names over, I mean, lead referrals. I mean, they're just referring a name over. I don't know that the franchise consultant name really fits into this, because I think of a franchise consultant as the person who helps the franchisor set up their franchise business. And so
absolutely,
to me, it's just that piece of they're actually helping with setting up the business. It's the business piece of it. It's not the sales piece of it.
Right. So we have brokers and we have, let's call them, lead referral agents. I think that would work. But I agree with you on consultants.
Yeah, and I just don't think consultants, to me, and I've seen it like you have, that consultants somehow get into the sales piece, or people who are doing the sales piece call themselves consultants. I don't, in all of my experience, put franchise consultants in that role.
Right. Yeah, I mean, at the very best, they're facilitators. So we call them franchise facilitators. I don't know.
We can come up with our own term.
Yeah, we can come up with our own term. Anyway, I think we can go on and on. But I do agree. I think consultants, franchise consultants, are ones that set up franchise businesses for the franchisor as well as various programs. I know myself, I like to say I'm a franchise marketing and development consultant, and a lot of people look at me and say, oh, well, you sell franchises. No, that's not right. So I'm glad you clarified that. Now, if people would adhere to it, I'd appreciate it. I know that's not going to be the case. You know, as I said, you know, anyone can be a franchise broker. What are your thoughts on the type of training that franchise brokers should go through?
You mean?
They have to have an understanding of franchise compliance. I mean, a little bit of understanding about franchising in general. And when they're not properly trained, and there are some franchise broker mills out there or some that try to get under the wire as not being a franchise themselves, but yet they're putting brokers into business. A lot of them just don't have a general understanding about franchise compliance and training. What type of training do you think they should go through?
I think they should definitely go through training. And most of the clients that we have that work with brokers, they actually have required training that they give the brokers. They also, you know, prepare specifications and guidelines and, you know, sales compliance manuals that they give to the brokers before they can start selling for the system. And so at a minimum, I think the systems that are bringing brokers in should have some sort of training materials high level on compliance with the franchise sales laws and also information about their systems in terms of what information can be given so that misrepresentations aren't made, so that inaccurate disclosures aren't given. In terms of what brokers outside of that, where the training should come from, I would love to see brokers be required to have some training. I don't know. It's not going to come in the form of something like, I know lawyers as a lawyer we have to do continuing legal education credits. I mean, I would love to see some sort of training program that brokers attend to be trained on the basics of franchise law, franchise sales provisions. I think it's very important. But at a minimum, I think franchisors should be doing that when they hire, providing something to the brokers when they hire them.
Right, and I think here's where the dilemma occurs, is you have a startup franchisor that barely knows how to do it themselves. What happens in those cases where they don't have the experience and know-how to train those brokers, where would the brokers go then?
In that instance, I would hope that the franchisor is working with outside lawyers that can actually give them at least a basic outline that they can provide to the broker of the franchise sales laws that they should be complying with.
I agree. Warren Lewis, put out that handbook, the Franchise Seller's Handbook. Maybe we need to do the Franchise Broker's Handbook and use it as a training manual.
A lot of this, I haven't read Warren's book, but I would assume a lot of the information in Warren's book is easily transferable to brokers, and the rules are the same.
Yeah, absolutely. You're 100% right, because it is geared towards franchise sellers, and they are a franchise seller. So maybe just a provision in there about the broker relationship. But yeah, you're right. It could be used, and that's Warren Lewis's The Franchise Seller's Handbook that we talked about last week. I think it's a great book. Definitely is a great book. Any other thoughts on franchisors utilizing franchise brokers that you would like to share?
I think that probably the thing for franchisors to really think about is making sure they have a plan in mind for what they're going to use the broker for, making sure they understand the cost structure and how it plays out, how it affects them in their business. It may seem like a great idea on the front end to shift that cost, but you have to figure out then how you're going to pay for your obligations if you've shifted the money away. I think that, to your point, I think that the franchisor absolutely has to stay involved with the broker in the sales process and in some way training or monitoring. You can't just basically give away the sales process, and the main reason there is that the franchisor is ultimately legally responsible for anything that goes wrong in the process. And so they really have to stay involved and understand what's going on.
Right, absolutely. I mean, because at the end of the day, it is the franchisor that's liable for the for franchise broker's actions, including any that might be considered illicit.
Yeah, and the other piece of it is if I think the turnover point, so when the broker turns the franchisee back or turns the prospect over to the franchisor, the franchisor needs to make sure that person really is a good fit. If the person's not a good fit, the franchisor is going to live with them for whatever the term of the agreement will be, whether it's 5 years or 10 years or 20. Some agreements are 20 years, and so that the franchisor needs to actively think about whether that person is the best fit. And I know that younger franchisors, emerging franchisors, a lot of them they're hungry for the leads, they're hungry for the prospects, they want the money in the door, but the headaches of someone 3 years down the road who's not the right fit for your system and the struggle that creates for franchisors is really something to think about before you sign the agreement.
Absolutely. I know in dealing with franchisors and generating franchise leads within social media, there's a transition period as the candidate comes out of the virtual world into the real world. And I don't think it's a lot different coming out of working with the franchise broker and into the franchise system itself. The franchise broker, you know, is probably talking to this candidate on a very regular basis, providing him all kinds of information, sharing information with him, showing him different things, answering his questions. There's a lot of attention during that that dating period, if you would. And then a lot of times, of course, when the sale is made, they make the transition from the broker to, usually with an upstart franchisor, it would probably be the founder, the CEO of the company, who actually finalizes the deal. And then what often happens is there's radio silence. And that franchisee, that new franchisee who was used to all this attention at the beginning, now is left alone.
And they feel
there's
neglected.
Very little in the transition process. And, of course, by the time someone gets back to him, because he starts calling up, he or she calls up and says, you know, I bought my franchise. When do we start working on location? When do we start working on looking at plans for build-out? Or whatever the case might be, there's that period of radio silence that I think really drives them crazy and makes them think, sure, I got all the attention in the world until I came across with my money, and then when I paid my money, nobody wants to talk to me. And I don't think it's intentional in many cases. I think that the typical sales process is conducive to that type of attention. And then, of course, with an upstart franchise founder, he might be just buried with a whole bunch of work and might not be tuned into talking to that new franchisee on a daily basis, and they might not have the staff of proper operations personnel in place to make the transition smooth. So I think the one word of advice I like to give startup franchisors and certainly emerging franchisors, if you're not already doing this, is make sure you have a seamless transition with basically the same methods of communication and the same messages as you take them out of the sales process into the business development process and turning it over to operations and getting them to the point of opening their locations. And I think eliminating a lot of those problems on the onset, as you said, Leslie, definitely would help as they get 2 or 3 years into the relationship.
Okay, I think that's that. We always say that you've got to watch the neglect factor. You've got to be cautious that you're not neglecting them after they felt that they were the center of your universe. So, yeah, that's exactly right. The one final thing that I would say is, because the franchisor's not involved and running the entire sales process before the franchisee actually signs the contracts, I would always recommend that the franchisor get a compliance questionnaire signed. People have different words, call them different things, but it's basically the document that says, did the franchisee receive any unauthorized statements, whether they're earning statements or information inconsistent with the disclosure documents? Were they promised anything that's not in the agreements? Those forms are very traditional in franchise systems, and in particular where you're using a third party to help with the process and the control of the process is removed from you. Those types of questionnaires really help you figure out if you have a problem before the 11th hour.
Right. And just for clarification, do franchisors under the new FTC rule have to put the broker as a franchise seller on the Item 23 form?
They do. They have to be listed on the back page, the receipt page of the disclosure document. There's no longer the obligation to list the brokers in Item 2 of the disclosure document, but the franchise, they should be listed as a franchise seller. And in addition to that, there's a disclosure that has to go on the cover page that the franchisor uses brokers or referral sources if you're going to use a broker.
Right, and if they do so after they've already, if they start doing so after they've already filed their FDD, do they have to amend it before the next registration date?
I would say that you could probably put that on the cover page and then send it to the state just as a non-material change to the disclosure. I would try it that way before I filed a formal amendment.
Sure. All right. Well, great. That was some interesting information on the pros and cons of using franchise brokers. So I know you attended the IFA Legal Symposium in Washington that just ended, what was it, the day before yesterday.
Yes.
Tell our audience a little bit about what the Legal Symposium is and why it's considered such an important event in franchising.
The Legal Symposium is one of two annual legal updates for franchise professionals. The Legal Symposium is put on by the International Franchise Association. It's hosted in Washington, D.C. This year was the 43rd annual IFA Legal Symposium. The sessions are, they run a basics track, so for anyone who's new to franchising, there's a franchising legal basics class, and then they run a number of advanced programs as well during the 2 days of the conference. There's also breakout sessions, roundtables, where we talk in small groups about a variety of legal issues, and then there's two lunch speakers and some morning speakers who, some of those sessions are more on business topics. So the opening session of the Legal Symposium was a business topic where they talked about the where have we been and where are we going in franchising. That session, interestingly enough, and not surprising, there was a lot of discussion about where we're going in terms of financing for the franchising industry.
Excellent. And you, I know you participated. Were you a speaker or in charge of one of the breakout sessions?
This year I did a roundtable, and my roundtable this year was dealing with transfers for financially distressed franchisees.
Well, that sounds like an interesting topic.
It was a very interesting topic. And there were lots of interesting topics, though. The roundtables are typically very well attended, and they run the gamut of, you know, things, disclosure issues, how to prepare notices of default, how to do renewal documents, how to deal with, you know,
wow,
covenants not to compete, social networking issues. So they're really trying to expand the topics. I think this year they had about a third more roundtables than in prior years, so a lot of topics to cover this year.
Well, you know, my antennas just went up when you said social networking issues. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, I didn't go to the roundtables because I was doing a roundtable. There was also a session on social networking, and that session actually I went to a portion of it, and they talked a lot about how do franchisors, what is social networking and different types of social networking, and then some areas where franchisors are trying to leverage social networking. So whether it's, you know, to produce franchise sales or to do customer service or whatever the case may be, how are they leveraging the social networking?
Right. You know, and I know, you know, let's back up to brokers again, because I've seen this plenty of times over the last 6 months, you know, and I try to emphasize to my franchise clients, you know, when you're using social media, especially for franchise candidate lead generation purposes, to make sure you don't come across with an earnings claim that, whether it's inadvertent or unintentional or done on the sly, I mean, it lasts forever online, and the same rules apply when you're within social media communicating or you're communicating in person. Now, to put a fine point on this, the most earnings claims that I have seen, again, and I'll give the benefit of the doubt here whether they're inadvertent, intentional, or unintentional. I'm not here to judge on that today. But the most claims that I've seen have come out of franchise brokers, which is what precipitated my question as to the type of training that they should get, because in talking with a lot of them, I mean, because I'm very vocal out there online and I'm not afraid to tell somebody, you know, hey, look, you're going to get yourself in trouble or get the franchisor in trouble if you're putting out these type of earnings claims. And quite frankly, a lot of these brokers don't have a clue about franchise rules and franchise compliance and FPRs and earnings claims and everything that falls under compliance. And that really troubles me, especially in the world of social media. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think so. Social media and email and all of that stuff, I think whenever you put something in print, I think people think about it a lot more. I think once you hit whether it's, whatever the social media outlet is or whatever the electronic version you're using of email or whatever, I think people get a little more informal and they get a little less, I don't want to say they're less concerned about rules, but I think they don't think about rules as much. And so I think it's just, I think that's a piece of it. It is less formal. I think people do it more quickly than they would. I think they think it through less. And so whether it's they don't know the rules or whether they don't think the rules apply to whatever they're doing or whether they're just pushing something out without enough forethought about what they're pushing out, I think they're all the problem.
I think it's something that franchisors need to be aware of when they do contract with a broker, that they're monitoring that broker's social media activity because it may be an earnings claim about your franchise brand.
I absolutely agree. And that's why I said earlier that I thought training and monitoring were crucial. And it doesn't matter whether you're asking for, give me copies of your paper marketing materials or give me copies of or access to all of the online ways you're trying to help us sell. I think, that type of information needs to flow back to the franchisor so they have a sense of what the broker's doing. And that, in the trying to protect the franchisor legally, all of their agreements should say have a very clear provision that the broker will comply with all laws that apply, including the franchise sales laws.
Right,
and I
think you bring up a good point because basically what you're saying is franchisors, even though they're turning over part of the sales process to the franchise brokers, they still need to manage the process and manage the broker to ensure that everything is going according to plan, and hopefully the plan was established ahead of time, and they're monitoring it. And they're tuned into the process and are able to react or act when they need to. And I think it's very important. I think too many franchisors think, oh, well, I've got a broker. I can sit back. I'll just wait for them to contact me. I think that's definitely a step in the wrong direction.
Right, and I think for the newer or the emerging franchisors, the reason they fall into that pitfall is they think the broker's more experienced. The broker's been doing this longer. They believe the broker knows what they're doing and is going to do the right thing. And then, sometimes that's not the way things turn out, and they haven't been watching and they haven't been monitoring. And that's
right.
A broad statement, and there are brokers, definitely brokers out there who do the right thing and that you wouldn't have to monitor. But I think from the franchisor's perspective, they're ultimately responsible. They need to be cautious.
Right, absolutely. Great. It was amazing how we got back on brokers after talking about the legal symposium. Last September, I spoke at the first Women's Franchise Network event in Houston that was hosted by Computer Explorer CEO Deb Evans. I believe that the WFN is really trying to gain some traction in Houston, and I hope we could do the same here in San Antonio, Austin area. Because as I kick off the San Antonio Austin Franchise Business Network in July, I'm certainly happy to promote the Women's Franchise Network. I know the two groups kind of parallel each other and have, the same values with respect to best practices in franchising and promoting franchising. But, Leslie, tell us, what do the girls have that does make the WFN stand apart?
I am a member and am very involved in a number of women's groups. The WFN is one of them. One of my partners, Marissa Fonts, is actually one of the DC leaders of the WFN. The WFN really has an amazing ability, I think, to help you build meaningful connections and with other franchise professionals. I think women in particular connect in a way that, that our male counterparts do not.
Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah, and it's an information-sharing group, and the women will come together, and even if it's a purely social setting, I mean, they will share and provide information to each other that we don't get in any other setting. And so I think the WFN has this great ability to create this network and a really wonderful support network for professionals, women professionals, and men, too. We have a number of men who typically come to the DC events, but I think that's one of the big differences that I see in the WFN and other women's networking groups that I'm a part of.
Sure, and I know a friend of mine, a former coworker and a former franchisor when I was a multi-unit franchisee, Barb Moran, is involved with the Women's Franchise Network as well. Isn't that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. Best wishes to Barb. I know she's taking a little bit of time recovering from an illness, so our best wishes go out to her. But, you know, I really believe in franchising because franchising is all about relationships, and social media is all about building relationships. And women are, and a lot of my male counterparts are going to probably scream at me. I really believe women get it where a lot of guys don't. And I think it's probably the reason why women are so successful on the franchisor side, as well as being the leaders in embracing social media. I believe probably is a main reason why about 90% of my franchise clients are of the female gender. It seems like that old scenario of husband and wife or boyfriend and girlfriend driving down in traffic and they get lost and the guy doesn't want to ask for directions and the woman is saying, no, we need to get, you know, ask directions, let's get there quickly, I don't want to run out of gas on the wrong side of town. And I think the same thing is true in franchising. I think the same thing is true in social media. The guys tend to want to hold back and say, no, we'll find our way, we'll work our way around, we could do it ourselves. And And the women are looking to share information, and they're looking to get as much information and do it as efficiently as possible. So my hats certainly go out to the female executives in franchising. I think the WFN is a great group. I know enjoyed speaking to them back in September, and hope to be as involved as I possibly can in promoting the WFN or at least the start of a WFN here in San Antonio and Austin.
And for anyone who's listening, I think there's probably 15 to 20 chapters either currently active or in the works. And if you don't have a chapter, you should go on to the IFA's website because they're definitely looking to expand. Where there's interest, they want to expand. So I encourage people to get involved and to do that.
Absolutely. Leslie, I really thank you for being a guest today on Franchise Today. I certainly look forward to future discussions with you as, of course, we explore and continue to explore franchise best practices and hopefully get to know you a little bit better outside the Franchise Today forum.
Thank you, Paul. I look forward to getting to know you better, too.
Same here. Again, my thanks go out to Joe Caruso as the co-producer of Franchise Today, Legal Eagle Franchise Series. I do consider him one of the most brilliant minds in franchising, and that's coming from me, not from him. And I really appreciate the help and the fortitude that he's put in putting together a great series with me. Remember, we're off next week, and we'll resume our weekly coverage on Thursday, June 4th at 12 p.m. Central, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Will be available on demand at www.blogtalkradio.com/Franchise Today Show. Until our next show on June 4th, I'm Paul Segretto. Have a great day, have a great week, and have a great Memorial Day weekend. And more importantly, and really say this with a full heart, please be safe in everything that you do. Have a great day. Bye.